This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how brave are you feeling right now? Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how curious are you feeling? Good. Now, add those two numbers together, and if you don't get an even 20, well, don't bother pushing on. Because this is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Every week, we dive to the outer depths of the universe to see the deadly and the amazing stuff that's inside. Now, my name is Dan. Hello, thank you so much for giving us a listen, because today, we'll chat about one of the most dangerous chemicals in the world that you can find everywhere. Honestly, it's found in everything from hair dye to rocket fuel. Also, we chat to a scientist with one of the best job titles ever, and she's researching a way to save the sea. We'll find out more about her expedition in a little bit. And next, I've got a way that you can get your science question answered by a proper genius. First, it's something to get you very excited for the summer.
The Fun Kids, A to Z of food, health and the environment. Brought to you by The Cooperative.
Hello, I'm Michael.
And I'm Emily.
We're here to introduce the Fun Kids A to Z of food, health and the environment. Today's letter is A, and A is for
active and healthy kids.
Keeping active is a great way to have fun and be healthy. When we do aerobic exercise like running, cycling or dancing, our heart needs to beat faster to pump blood around the body to all those muscles we're using. We also breathe faster because we need more oxygen. This strengthens our heart, and so the more exercise we do, the better our body can do its job. Just think, next time you're riding your bike, playing football in the park or skipping in the playground, you're helping make your body stronger and fitter while you're having fun. Experts recommend that we should all do at least 30 minutes moderate physical activity every day. Games that include jogging and climbing are especially good because they strengthen your bones.
I want strong bones.
Well, do you like playing on the monkey bars at school?
Yes, sometimes.
And do you play tag in the playground?
Yes, I do.
Well, you've been strengthening your bones already then.
Regular exercise is not only good for your health, it's a great way to make new friends. You'll find that the more active you are, the more exercise you can do before you get really tired and out of breath.
Because your heart will be better at pumping blood around the body.
Yes, and oxygen will be delivered more quickly to the areas that need it.
Watching TV can be fun, but sitting down and doing nothing for hours on end every day isn't good for your body, is it?
That's right. Our bodies are better than any machine, but we have to look after them.
Time for a quick quiz. Okay, Michael, I'm going to ask you to name three activities you did this week that helped you keep fit. And you can play along at home too.
Well, last Monday I did go swimming.
Yes, swimming is good for toning and strengthening muscles that you don't always use. Another one?
I walk to school.
Yes, walking to school will help you raise your energy levels for the day ahead. One more.
This weekend I'm going ice skating.
Lucky you. Yes, that'll be a good exercise because your legs will have to work hard to keep you skating. Can I come with you, please?
Of course you can, but don't laugh when I fall over.
To help your body get fitter and stronger, as well as keeping active, it's also important to eat healthily. But we'll talk about that another day.
Time for us to go outside and have some fun.
See you next time.
Bye!
The Cooperative supports Activate Sport, a great opportunity for kids to attend sporting camps and learn from sporting stars. And as part of its campaign for healthy living, it is also the proud sponsor of the Rugby League Championships. Find out more about how to get involved, keep active and eat healthily on the Fun Kids website.
The Fun Kids, A to Z of food, health and the environment. Brought to you by The Cooperative.
We've got more ways that you can get active, loads of ideas to help you get outside for free on the Fun Kids app, wherever you get your podcast from, you know, places like iTunes, and they're always at funkidslive.com. Now, this has been sent in from Rowan, who is 8, and he lives up in the mountains in Montana in America. And he's got a question for an expert. He asks this. If the sun is a star, why is it so much brighter and bigger than all the other stars? I reckon, Rowan, it's not, you know. I reckon it's all about perspective. And the sun is exactly the same size as most of the other stars in the sky. Even smaller, perhaps it could be. It's just the sun is so much closer to us, so it looks a lot brighter than all the rest. I think you'll find that's what it is. I'll get an expert on to give you the official answer anyway in a few weeks, fingers crossed. But I reckon you'll find they will agree with me. Thank you so much anyway, Rowan, for sending in that message. I'm delighted that you're enjoying the show. Remember, if you've got a question just like Rowan that you want an expert to answer for you, the easiest way to ask it is to leave it in the comments section while you're leaving us a review on the iTunes podcast store. It's just the simplest way all round. So find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on that iTunes podcast or drop us your name, leave us 5 stars as well, and write me a question, and then I will find an expert to answer it for you. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, have you seen the big story in the news this week? Scientists from all over the world, they're planning to undertake one of the biggest projects ever tried in Antarctica. They're going to examine the Thwaites Glacier. Now, Anna Hogg is a glaciologist at the University of Leeds, and she can tell us more. Hey, Anna.
Hi, nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you. Now, let's start at the very beginning. What is the Thwaites Glacier?
So Thwaites is a massive block of ice in West Antarctica. It's located down by the South Pole, and it's a big ice stream that flows from far inland, hundreds of kilometres inland, right through down to the coast and into the ocean. And the main thing that you see when you first look at Thwaites Glacier through a satellite image, which is what I do, is that it's covered in giant crevasses. It's really hard to get a scale of how big these breaks in the ice are, but in fact, when you fly over it, you realise that in fact you can fit houses down there. The cracks are so large.
So let me paint me a picture in my mind of what it actually looks like. So if I did fly over it, what would I see? Am I seeing a load of ice, like skyscrapers of ice that are hundreds of feet above the sea? What does it look like?
So if you're inland on the continent, you're flying over it. When you look down below, you see an extremely crevassed ice tongue. The crevasses are very blocky in shape, so the ice looks at like lots of giant ice cubes in a kind of a gridded network. But each of these sections is sort of over 1 to 2 kilometres long in a square shape. So they're just so huge, you can't even really get a scale of it. When the ice then meets the ocean, there's a really steep ice cliff, which is hundreds of metres high, and icebergs break off from this all of the time. So the ocean that flows in front of the ice stream is filled with shards of iceberg and ice that have fallen off the grounded ice stream. But then there's also other types of ice like sea ice that forms as well during the wintertime. And all of this moves around constantly in front of the ice stream. And so it's a really exciting place to look at.
Hold on a second. There's more than one type of ice?
There's more than one type of ice. So ice that we call sea ice is literally just ocean water that freezes. And so this can only ever get to be a few metres thick, maybe 4 metres maximum. Whereas ice that's in a glacier or stored on land, this is formed in a completely different way. It's actually caused by snow falling on land and building up and getting compressed over sort of hundreds of thousands of years. And eventually this can be hundreds of metres thick. So there's a total difference in the vertical scale of these two features.
So this week, it's been announced that scientists from both the UK and America will undertake a mission to Antarctica over the next 5 years. What are they examining with the Thwaites Glacier, though? What are they looking for?
So the reason why we want to get out onto Thwaites Glacier itself is because we want to be able to take some measurements that you can't actually make from space. So this would be measuring things like bedrock topography. And what I mean by that is, what is the elevation of the land underneath the glacier that the ice is resting on? It's surprising to think, but it's not a flat plain. Actually, the land underneath the glaciers can be really bumpy. When you go to the Lake District, maybe in the UK, you can see mountains and hills. And in fact, it's really surprising that that's what the ground looks like underneath all of this ice. We'll also be taking measurements of ocean temperature. This is another parameter that you can't measure using Earth observation satellites. So in order to make those types of measurements, we have to involve some really interesting techniques. We can send underwater submersibles. You may remember Boaty McBoatface.
Is he coming back?
He's coming back. He's going to be taken to Thwaites Glacier. And we're going to use that to measure ocean temperatures. But we also do something that I find even more exciting. In fact, we can use seals to help us make measurements of ocean temperature.
Right. Tell me more.
So seals, basically, when they swim around in the ocean, they come into contact with different ocean water. And what you can do, in fact, is you can stick a temperature sensor on a seal's forehead and send them down, and they swim around in the ocean and make measurements as they go. These instruments aren't attached to the seal forever, though, because every year a seal will molt its coat, and so then you'll lose the temperature sensor eventually, and you'll have to rely on something else in the future. But it's a great use of the natural environment that we are completely reliant on in order to understand how ocean temperatures are in Antarctica, and we use this all the time.
It's one of the most fantastic things about science, isn't it? We've got both ends of the spectrum there. You've got this incredibly smart submarine that caused uproar last year in the country helping you out, and you've also got a little thermometer on someone's head, on a seal's head.
Yep.
It's incredible. So when you've got all this research, when you've got the data that you're going down there to find over 5 years, what are you going to do with it? What will it tell us about the world?
So what we want to do with Thwaites is we want to try and understand how much ice has been lost in the past and how much ice is likely to be lost in the future. When you lose ice from a glacier in Antarctica, because it's come from the land, it directly contributes to sea level rise. And so this is really important for anyone that lives on the coastline. And in fact, 80% of the world's population live around the coast. And so you really want to know, not just now how sea levels are changing, but maybe how they will be in 50 to 100 years' time. If you think in the UK, you know, all of our roads and bridges and all of our infrastructure has been in place, you know, in some places since the Roman times. And so it's really important that we plan a long time ahead to make sure that we don't build things in places that might get inundated with seawater down the line.
You're saying planning ahead, though. If, for instance, Thwaites melted overnight, if all that water, tons and tons and tons of it, went into the sea, when is that likely to affect us up here, the other side of the world in the UK?
So it's really difficult to put a number on how far in the future Thwaites, a large amount of ice would cause a very significant amount of sea level rise, and that's going to be one of the core questions we're going to try and answer. What we do know from modelling simulations that this section of West Antarctica, if all of West Antarctica was to be completely melted away and all that ice was to go into the ocean, it's got the potential to raise global sea levels by 6 metres on average. But sea level rise also isn't just an average number that's the same across the whole globe. Different regions around the world will experience more or less sea level rise, and so it's such a complicated picture that we really need these giant science programs with big teams of scientists from all over the world to answer our questions more accurately.
And do sea levels rising affect other things with the climate around the Earth? Does it affect temperatures? What else does it impact?
Well, the Earth system's processes are all really interlinked, and so we know that there's loads of complicated feedback mechanisms that we're only really starting to understand. One thing that's really important is that if you imagine all this ice in a glacier that gets put into the ocean, in fact, relative to ocean water, which if you go down to the beach and if you accidentally put some seawater in your mouth, you know it's really salty. But all of this water that gets melted off these glaciers, that's all fresh water. You know, you can drink it. And in fact, we do. When we go out on expeditions in Antarctica, we melt the snow and the ice as our drinking water that we completely rely on. And so that has a possibility that it will affect things like ocean circulation, because if you put fresh water into the ocean and it affects the salinity, you then need to do a whole load of modelling studies to see how this will have knock-on impacts on other things like ocean currents.
You mentioned earlier, if all the water and all the ice on top of Antarctica melted away, what would it look like if it was all gone? As in, what's it looking like underfoot on Antarctica right now? Is it all craggy rock? What would we see?
Do you know, that's a really interesting question. So if you took away all the ice in Antarctica, and everyone knows what it looks like, you've got a big circular mass with a little tail sticking out that's the Antarctic Peninsula. But actually, if you took away all of that ice today, with sea levels as they are right now, the picture would be completely different. All of West Antarctica, where Thwaites Glacier is located, is actually grounded on bedrock that's below present-day sea level. So all of that half of the continent would be completely underwater, even now, without any sea level rise at all. East Antarctica, on the other hand, which is the round side on the other side of the continent from Thwaites Glacier, this has got ice that's over 4 kilometres thick at its deepest. So if you think about vertically 4 kilometres of ice, it's just a huge volume of ice that is located in this region. But fortunately, that side is thought to be much more stable because the bedrock is above present-day sea level rise. It's really important when a glacier is resting on bedrock that's below sea level because it means it's coming into contact with warmth from ocean waters, but also warmth from the atmosphere. And so it means you've got these two different processes that are acting on the ice. And that makes it much more complicated to understand how it's going to evolve in the future, because if both warm up, then you could have an even larger change than if just one warmed up.
Anna, that's big things that you've managed to make so clear for us. Thank you so much. Also, glaciologists, fantastic job title. One of the best we've had on the show, and we've had some mental job titles here, so brilliant. Thank you so much, Anna Hogg from the University of Leeds, for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
No worries. Great to speak to you.
So for today's Dangerous Dan, we're having a look at one of the most deadly chemicals in the world. And it's everywhere. It's used to clean your toilets and to get rockets into space. Hydrogen peroxide is a chemical made from 2 hydrogen atoms and 2 oxygen atoms. So it looks really simple, written down on paper, H2O2. But in real life, it's varied and it's highly dangerous. Now it's clear, it's pale blue, slightly more viscous than water. And the real reason why this simple chemical has made it into Dangerous Dan, I know it's not the most glamorous thing we've ever had on the show, but it's because you'll find it almost everywhere. Hydrogen peroxide right now is probably in the bleach that is cleaning your toilet. It's even used in hair dye. People cover their head in it to turn their head blonde. You know on bonfire night, right, when you get those glow sticks and you snap them in the middle to make them light up in the dark? Yeah. That's hydrogen peroxide too. And also, get this, in its most dangerous form, when it's at its most concentrated, it's used as rocket fuel. The peroxide is pumped into the rocket, where it's ignited, and at over 600 degrees Celsius, it produces this vast amount of thrust. It pushes the rockets into the air, shattering the atmosphere and soaring into space. Now that same chemical, that dangerous hydrogen peroxide, it's also probably cleaning the stains off your toilet right now. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, I've got a warning from the Forestry Commission in just a sec. It's all about a tiny insect that is toxic and it's taking over. First, let's get another extreme athlete challenge. This is where we pit the best of humankind against one of the greatest beasts ever. And today, it's all about going the distance.
Extreme athlete challenge with the Society of Biology.
Join us just as the race is about to begin. We're pitting man against animal in our Extreme Athlete Challenge. So who can keep going the longest? Who has the greatest endurance on earth? In lane one, it's Patrick Makamusyoki from Kenya, who broke the world record for marathon running in Berlin in 2011. And in lane two, the kangaroo.
This powerful marsupial has large hind legs, feet adapted for leaping, and a long muscular tail for balance.
Taking their places. And they're off.
What an amazing start.
Patrick Makamusyoki can average 1 mile in just over 4 minutes, so he's travelling at an incredible 13 miles per hour. But 13 miles an hour is no more than a jog for the kangaroo. He can go twice as fast as that, covering 15 to 20 feet with a single bounce.
Patrick is an amazing athlete, but he's been left behind as the kangaroo leaps ahead. And as a kangaroo can keep up high speed for 20 miles or more, Patrick has no chance of catching up on this marathon.
So let's hear it for the kangaroo, one of our extreme athletes.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
Right, let's find out all the science that's been in the news this week. Now, the US-led InSight mission is getting ready for Mars. Scientists, they've just added seismometers to the rockets, which will be flying to the red planet pretty soon, and they'll be able to track the equivalent of earthquakes over there, which is called Marsquakes. That's right, you guessed it. And they hope that can determine the internal structure of the planet, make it a lot more clearer for us. Also, people in the southeast of England have been warned of an outbreak of toxic caterpillar. The hairy horrors, which are called the oak processionary moths. They can cause asthma attacks, vomiting and skin rashes. They've been spotted all across London and the southeast of England, and the Forestry Commission is warning you not to touch one if you see it. You know one if you'll see it as well, because it's got about 62,000 hairs on each caterpillar. And finally, researchers at the Yale University in America have kept the brains of pigs alive several hours after the bodies have died. Now, they managed to restore blood flow to the brains of the pigs for quite a while. They think that the pig had no conscious knowledge that this was happening, though. And they're using this research to try and keep human brains intact after death for medical evaluation. We'll have more from Science in the News at the same time next week. Right now, we're travelling back in time and heading under the water.
Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur.
At the Natural History Museum.
Imagine going back in time, not 100 years or 1,000 years, but millions of years. To the age of the dinosaur. Welcome to the Cretaceous period, which existed between 65 and 144 million years ago. More varieties of animals and plants lived than ever before. From the dinosaur on the land to the plants they ate, things were getting pretty busy underwater too. Dinosaurs didn't go into the oceans, but that didn't mean they were empty. Far from it. Much of the sea life from the Jurassic period remained, including Ichthyosaurus, agile dolphin-like creatures, as well as starfish and ammonites, soft shellfish with long, streaming tentacles.
Wow, he's massive! Let's get out of this way.
He certainly is. Some Cretaceous ammonites were enormous, as much as 2 meters in diameter, and much bigger than their Jurassic relatives. Along with these older creatures, new types of fish were appearing, the ancestors of those we find in our seas today. These included rays, flatfish with wing-like fins, and teleosts, bony fish not so different to the cod you get in the chip shop.
Uh-oh, that looks like a shark to me.
The wide variety of life made the oceans an attractive place for predators. Sharks, like those seen today, battled alongside much larger plesiosaurs, powerful reptiles with large flippers and a long neck. But towards the end of the Cretaceous period, a terrifying predator ruled, the mosasaur. Here comes one now!
Let's get out of here. He's way scarier than a shark.
Mosasaurs look like streamlined lizards. Their short paddle-like limbs and powerful tails were ideal for fast swimming, enabling them to pounce underwater at prey. Smaller specimens crunched on sea urchins and mollusks, while the largest variety, some 17 meters long, preyed on birds, fish and reptiles, and even other mosasaurs. Mosasaurs had a double-hinged jaw and flexible skull, much like a snake, which meant they could almost gulp down their prey whole. Again, just like snakes or Komodo dragons.
Paleontology. Pick.
How do we know what the world looked like millions of years ago?
Scientists piece together evidence from fossils using lots of different techniques, including microscopes to look at tiny details and CT scanners to peer inside. They record information about where a fossil was found, examine its surroundings, look at what animals ate, and compare fossils to similar animals alive today, like comparing the mosasaurs to snakes. Computers are used to take this data and create models, from simple black and white pictures to exciting moving animated monsters. Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur.
The new interactive exhibition at the Natural History Museum. Walk alongside life-size moving animatronic dinosaurs and other strange creatures among the smells and sounds of the prehistoric Jurassic swamps and Cretaceous deserts. Find out more at nhm.ac.uk.
But watch out for what's around the corner.
There are loads more ways you can travel back in time with our Age of the Dinosaurs series. They're all there for you to catch up on the free Fun Kids app, over on wherever you normally get your podcast from, you know, places like iTunes, and always you can listen at funkidslive.com. And that is it for another race around the darkest, deepest and most dangerous parts of the universe. We're back next week with another Fun Kids Science Weekly, where we'll be chatting to an expert from the University of Oxford all about how your gut controls your mind, and that scientists have discovered you actually are what you eat. So more of that in next week's show. Remember, you can catch up with all the brilliant science series from Fun Kids. You can save them to your phone, listen whenever you fancy. They're on the free Fun Kids app. They're over at funkidslive.com and wherever you get your podcast from, you know, places like iTunes. And you can hear Fun Kids all around the country on that free Fun Kids app, on your DAB digital radio and at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.